Hey, thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For 11 years, I've been a professional intuitive and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. Today, I want to share some of my favorite tools for discovering magic, reigniting your creative spark, managing your consciousness, choosing a path and purpose that will allow you to do everything you love, and shifting your negative thoughts about money and abundance. And of course, as always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show. So be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra message. Before I forget, I had a very cool instance of signs and synchronicities this week, and since this is an ongoing topic really in my life, I promise to tell you about them as they happen. So there is a course that I'm considering taking with a very powerful, well-known, successful fiction editor. And I would love to work with this person professionally. His retainer is somewhere around $50,000. So that's kind of out of the question. But he is doing a small group workshop, and I was invited to take part in that. And it's a much more reasonable kind of $500 entrance fee. So whether or not I should do it was not really entirely about the price tag amount necessarily. I really am concerned about making the time for it, first of all. And whenever I do something to work on my craft, on my fiction craft, I always feel a little bit like I'm taking away from actually writing the fiction itself. And so there is a toss up between, do I use the time I've set aside to work on this passion to actually do the thing, or do I take some of the time to work on improving it? And I truly do believe that you have to do a little bit of both. And I kind of make a general rule with myself that I do one big major thing per year to work on my craft. And that's usually something technical, going to a conference, going to a workshop, taking a course, learning something deeper at another level. And bottom line is, you guys know me for nonfiction, and you know me for this podcast and for doing readings and for helping other people become professional intuitives. And I love doing all that. And that's part of my purpose as a storyteller. But there's another part of my purpose as a storyteller that's very close to my heart, and that is writing fiction. And I really want to take that to another level. I had a personal goal of getting that to a certain level by the time I turn 50. So I've roughly got like a couple of years, and I'm not moving as quickly as I thought I would be. So anyway, these are all the things that are knocking around in my head and making me think, oh, wow, this course looks amazing. I really want to do it. So I asked my guides to kind of give me a sign, and it was about, again, more than the money amount specifically, but I used to do this a lot as a kid. I don't know if you guys did this, but I would flip coins or roll dice or pull cards. Of course, you know, the eight ball, the magic eight ball, that was always, the oracle of choice. But that wasn't enough for me because it just had those few little handful of limiting answers. And so I would play these much more complex, random games with the forces of whatever was out there that I believed was affecting this or communicating with me. And that concept has evolved over time, whether it was God or my angels or my guides or, you know, the universe or some other kind of inexplicable mystery. But I would make these very random specific rules of occurrences to help me decide if I was going to do something. So I would say something like, you know, if the phone rings in the next 3 minutes, then I'm going to do such and such. Or if the next car that drives by the house is white, then that means that I'm supposed to go forward with whatever it is that I'm thinking about. And I didn't even realize how much I did this kind of thing until I set out to tell you this story. And I started to notice, wow, you know what? This goes really far back with me. I do this with a lot of things. And it's because, probably to a certain degree, analysis paralysis, anxiety, overthinking things, I can talk myself in and out of a decision a million different ways. And I noticed that that's one of the main things that people bring in a reading, is they bring me situations that they've thought about to the point where they just can't trust any of their own thoughts and nothing is really feeling decisive. And I think at an early age, I devised this kind of divination game or whatever it was as a means to kind of skip all that or to act as a tiebreaker. And that's really what it is a tiebreaker. So anyway, a couple days ago, I get this email that comes through telling me about the online workshop that this editor's doing. And he had done a live one about 6 months ago, and it was a much higher price tag, and it was in a part of the country that was kind of prohibitive for me to go and do at that time. So this looked like a really great opportunity. And I do know him personally. I've met him and worked with him in a little bit different context and worked with some of the people around him. So I sent him an email and just asked him a couple of questions that I had about what we were going to do in the workshop. And I didn't hear back from him right away, but I figured, you know, probably not the best idea. Send him a question about the workshop right as he's like trying to close the workshop and, you know, sell out the last few seats or whatever it is. And he may have set, you know, the emails up on automation somehow or something like that. So I didn't really mind so much that I didn't hear back from him right away. And I thought later, like, I probably shouldn't have even really emailed him. It was just me kind of playing that game with myself, like, okay, well, if I write him and he writes me back, then obviously I'm meant to do it or whatever. And so I was waffling about it. And I set a sort of goal for myself to decide by that evening. I even put a reminder on my phone. You've got to pick a time to say, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this, but I have to stop thinking about it because it's taking up too much energy. So I asked my psychic friend, Scott Vaughn, who's probably listening to the show. Scott is one of a small select group of people who are also intuitive that I'm friends with enough that I can text randomly out of the blue. So what should I do in this situation? And, you know, kind of these little quick readings we kind of share between ourselves. And so I asked Scott, I texted him and I told him about the course and basically told him what I just told you, but like in two lines. I made it as simple as possible and just asked him what his feelings were about it. And he gave me some very good advice. And then out of the blue, I get this email from a client who I've been working with for a few years, but I haven't talked to her in forever, like over a year. And she emails me out of the blue and says, you know what? I still owe you money for a series of mentoring sort of calls and exercises we were doing together. And I honestly didn't know. I had either forgotten about it or I wasn't super concerned that she wasn't going to pay up or whatever. For whatever reason, it was not at all on my radar. Like, I never would have gone looking for this money or looking for her. And she emails me right at that moment and says, I'm so sorry about this. I just realized I owe you $500. And she PayPal'd it to me right then. And so I'm dealing with that and emailing her back and saying, oh, cool. Well, thanks. Awesome. You know, or whatever. And I get another email right on top of that. And it's the editor who is doing the workshop and answering my questions. And on top of it, he's like, oh, well, if you're going to do this here, do this other link. I have a discounted amount for, you know, friends and family and a kind of special thing. And it was, like $495 or something like that. So I literally got two emails right in a row. And I had sort of set up with my guides like the thought that, you know what, if something really kind of comes through that just really speaks to me and feels like a sign that I'm supposed to do this course, you know, bring it on. It was a very general kind of thing that I put out there. I was still in the headspace of kind of trying to think this through logically and make a decision. So anyway, bam, bam, two emails in a row, one with the exact amount that I need for the course and another with, you know, a discount that made that almost identical. And I do this, by the way, for my repeat clients. So there's nothing shady about that or anything. I have clients who I work with on an ongoing basis, and I offer them different rates and little, you know, handshake perks and stuff so that they do get rewarded for how much they support my work. And so he was doing something similar with me. But anyway, the timing of it all was really pretty amazing. And I spoke with the client yesterday who had sent me that email just to let her know the part she played in it, because I wanted to know if from her end she was feeling this impulse like, I suddenly need to send Slade money, you know, and she loved it. It was very validating for her as well. So, you know, whenever you have that impulse, even if it's just to say hello to someone, do it. I always feel like sometimes there's something behind that, and I always obey those impulses because you never know what you might be participating in or being used for. So anyway, just wanted to share that with you guys. It made me feel like, okay, I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I am supposed to do this, and of course, I'm going to do it. And I'm just finding all kinds of extra time to work this in, and I'm excited about it. I'll let you know how it goes. So in other news, in my world, the podcast hosting platform that I use for this podcast recently introduced this new map feature into the statistics dashboard. And I have to put this out there. I'm dying to know who is listening from Tokyo. Tokyo is number one in terms of cities in all the world for downloads of this show. Japan is number two as a country after the United States, which is really surprising. And it's grown steadily. It wasn't this case right off the bat. It wasn't the case, but I've noticed in other statistics, it's popped up a few times, and I knew that it was kind of crossing my radar that there were a lot of listeners in Japan, and I thought, okay, well, that's kind of cool. But now that I see this map and I'm seeing all the downloads in Tokyo, so I'm dying to know if you are one of my listeners from Tokyo. I'd love to hear from you. contact@sladeroberson.com. Please send me an email and let me know how you found the show and just, you know, what resonates with you and what you're getting from it. I have heard from other podcasters that many people listen to English language podcasts as a way of learning the language or refining and polishing their accents. So I don't know if that's the case or if I just happen to have a lot of people in Tokyo that dig this show, but that was kind of cool and I want to know what's going on with you guys. So hello to Tokyo. If you're in Japan, please write me and tell me how you're doing. So I would also like to be on some other podcasts. If you'd like to have me on your show, let me know. If you listen to another podcast and you'd like to hear me on that one, do me a favor, send the host an email and recommend me. I used to do a lot of other people's podcasts and talk radio shows. before I started doing my own. And since I started doing my own, I haven't been doing any guest appearances, but I would still like to do guest appearances, and I am available to come on and speak on your show as a guest or for an interview or a panel or whatever you got going on. If you think of me, please let me know. I want to say a quick thank you to Seth Cruz, my newest supporter on Patreon. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access bonus Q&A episodes where you guys send in questions. I record answers to them, and they go out to patrons of the show exclusively. So thanks to Seth for being the latest person to join those ranks. It really means a lot to me, and it proves that you guys are enjoying the show and you want it to continue, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm thinking of offering a new level of support for the show where you get to access all the downloadable courses and books from the shop on my site. And the way I'm thinking this would work probably is that each month one course would be the featured download and would be accessible to those people at that level on Patreon. And then I would rotate through most of the products that I have available, making a new one sort of the featured download each month. And we'd go through them all. So you can hang out on that level for 5 or 6 months and, you know, access some of my courses. And you can always edit or change your pledge amount up or down. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, so write and tell me. I'll let you know for sure when I decide to do this. You can always edit your pledge amount if you made one months ago at a lower amount and you want to raise it to access the bonus content. I'm including a show note link now on how to do that. So where I have the, you know, how to support the show on Patreon link, I'm putting a link that says, you know, how to edit your pledge amount. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing the show, and access the bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. That's patreon.com/shiftyourspirits, all one word. I'd also like to give a quick shout out to Colleen Pinckney because I had an email from her with some really specific supportive feedback about the show and how she listens to it and where and why and what she likes, etc. Many of you have actually taken the time to do this, and the idea of saying hi here on the podcast is an evolving thing. So thank you retroactively to all of those of you who have written me like this in the past. I love getting these emails and Facebook messages and tweets about what resonates with you and what you'd like to hear more of. So if you have that impulse to contact me, please do. And now I'd like to talk about why I hate self-help books and the ones I really don't. I used to work in a metaphysical bookstore 17 years ago, a place called New Moon, which is legendary in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Since the 1980s, it closed a few years ago, unfortunately, after the original owner passed. But when it was live and thriving, each of the people who worked in the store kind of had our own section of expertise, and we would do the buying for those sections. We would buy the particular books that we were knowledgeable about. So the owner would ask us, you know, what are the books that are missing that we really need to have on this topic, and I would supply mine, and then, you know, there was a person in the store who was really knowledgeable about Buddhism. There was someone who was really knowledgeable about crystals and gemstones and all that kind of stuff. So we each kind of had a different topic area. My topic area of expertise was goddess religion, feminist spirituality, neo-paganism, witchcraft, and magic. I had already filled up on those books as a teenager, and so I was working as a buyer in this bookstore. This would have been around my early 30s, and I continued up until around the time that I started Shift Your Spirits consuming a lot of personal development, self-help, nonfiction, and I have to tell you, I reached a point where I just hated the format of self-help books, the way that they always have this personal story with this named sad person and, you know, what they went through. And I get it. I understand why that's in there. And I mean, I just gave you a personal story in the intro to this show, and I just gave you a personal story about working in a metaphysical bookstore and my relationship with books. So it's a formula that is inherent, and it works. But you know what I'm talking about, how there's always this part of the chapter that feels a little fluffy and Reader's Digest-like, and then at the end of the chapter, you get the actual point, which is kind of the, here's the action step on what to do. And as I would read these books, I was just always thinking, give me the freaking recipe. Just give me the recipe. You know, like I wanted to go through every self-help book and just strip out the sections that were like, here's the part of what you do. Step one, two, three. And so I decided that when I started to write my own personal development material and put out books in particular, that was going to be my approach. And I don't have a lot of anecdotal fluff in things like The Money Shift or Manifest Anything. I really wanted to make them very short and sweet and recipe focused. They're tutorials, they're how-tos. This is what you do. These are the steps. And so I just want you to have the steps and just get on with it. It doesn't make for like curl up in bed kind of reading. But for those of you who are consuming nonfiction because you want to do something with the information, I feel like that's the point. And the advent of digital books really allowed for me to kind of throw out the format of what was expected in the typical self-help book. They're usually 200, 250 pages paperback. And if, you know, you have to fill up part of that page content with stories in order to fill out that size and make it homogenous, that's what publishers did and do. But with the ebooks, you don't really have to do that anymore. It can be any length you want. It doesn't have to be long enough to fit comfortably in a paperback. It can be really short. So on the last episode with Michelle Vandepass, toward the end of the show, I asked her, you know, what's kind of missing for you from the whole self-help, personal development world? And she said, I am so over the concept of self-help. And I loved that because it's so close to my own attitude, obviously. But she went on to explain that what she really meant by that was she was really over this idea that you were, there was something wrong with you and you're broken and you need fixing and you're just pathetic without some big change. And that her approach was much more about the idea that you already have everything you need to work with within you, and it's more about bringing that forward and revealing it. And I thought that was really interesting because it sounded so much like the message that I got from my guides right before I began Shifter Spirits. And, you know, the message that I kept hearing and kept experiencing everywhere was, you're already everything that you've ever wanted to become. And that became kind of like this mantra that I started to attach myself to. And it kind of became the turning point on which I was able to go from consuming a lot of this information to feeling like, okay, I'm now going to turn around and put what I have to say back into the collective. I'm going to turn around and go the other direction. And so maybe that represents the turning point in a lifetime of consuming self-help to then becoming someone who puts out self-help material. Something that I've noticed with those whom I mentor that are in the process of sort of coming out of the psychic closet, as they say, or, you know, trying to find their version of what it means to be a professional intuitive or a healer or a spiritual teacher in some way, they're answering a calling. And that could be any number of things depending on who you are personally and what your gifts are. But one thing that is true for everyone in that process is that you reach a point where you're just kind of full up to the eyeballs. You have just gorged yourself on whatever wisdom and knowledge and information and motivation you can get. And it's all an inhalation. You know, you're inhaling. It's this deep, deep breath that just goes on and on and on. And then there's a pause. And what's supposed to happen after the pause? You have to exhale, you know? You have to finally let that breath out. And so that big psychic wisdom self-help breath is what you have to put back out into the world. And so whatever that is it probably is something that someone else has talked about, but it's changed and filtered by your vessel, your unique life experience, your unique personality. So my mentoring students are always at the point where they're asking, okay, where do I point this breath that's about to explode out of me? Like, where do I aim it so that it actually does something constructive and useful and productive in the world? And even as I glibly say, you know, you don't need self-help books, or, you know, Michelle and I are over self-help, I could tell you a lot more about why I don't like them and what I think is wrong with them. But I know there are tons of you who are still in that place where you are absorbing and learning and voraciously hungry for this kind of information. And I don't want to do anything to discourage that, because we all go through that period at a different point. Just know that if you ever reach a point where it all starts to feel like it's saying the same thing, and you've sort of run out of finding a new vein of wisdom, maybe it's time for you to consider what you have to put back into the collective. Maybe it's your turn to say something. But anyway, I don't want to go on and on about what I don't like about them, because that is pretty negative. And you could even be at the beginning of the journey. As you're listening to me, this could be a point in your life where you're just starting to consume this stuff. And we all have that period. For me, it was, you know, earlier in life. And for a lot of us, it may have been from the time we were teenagers. Other people pick it up later, or as more commonly is the situation, you went through a period where you absorbed a lot of this stuff in your youth, then you kind of put it on the shelf, and now it's come back around for you. There's something that is sort of trying to get your attention again, or you have reawakened to your spiritual path and experience in some way. So if wherever you are in this process is fine. I'm not judging you. My title for this episode is meant to be attention grabbing and a little cheeky. There are books that are self-help books that I love, and I still recommend all the time to this day. But you know what? There's only a few of them, actually. There's just this small little cluster of books that I think are true gems, but I'd recommend them over and over and over again. So what I want to do on this episode is kind of take you through this existential spiritual triage, like the idea that you are at some kind of crisis point or real turning point in your life. And I feel that there are five books that you need to really save yourself from an existential spiritual crisis. I'm excluding fiction. I read a lot of fiction and a lot of novels, and we'd be here all day if I started talking about fiction works. So I'm sticking to nonfiction, and I'm saying that there are tons of other nonfiction books that I do think are great. I even have a page on my website I can link to that has kind of all the best books, in my opinion, on different parts and topics of spirituality, and I link to a whole bigger list than this. But these are the five books that I would recommend if you could only take one book bag to a desert island and there was like no way you could charge a Kindle. So you had to, you know, just carry this one little stack of books that were going to be your existential personal development lifesavers. So if you're having an existential crisis, or you feel like something is missing in your world, or you just want to experience a big shift, but in a simple way, in a practical, down-to-earth way. One or more of these books could be the tool that you're looking for. My approach to any self-help book is simply to glean at least one epiphany or incorporate one exercise into your everyday life and move on. You know, skim through it if you want to, grab the part that you are meant to grab and then move on from it. So the first book that I want to talk about is called The Spiral Dance by Starhawk. And I mention it first because it's been with me for the longest. Whenever women, especially, came into New Moon looking for an epiphany around spirituality or an introduction to a reinvigorated sort of spiritual path or an alternate kind of new age path, this is the first time any author ever affirmed for me that the force of intelligence in the universe and the life-giving power in nature is inherently a feminine energy. God as a woman, if you will. It's also one of the best breakdowns and introductions to neo-paganism. And neo-paganism is actually expressed in our contemporary society a lot in environmentalism and preppers, and it can be a part of spirituality, and it can also be a sort of practical natural worldview that is environmentally focused in a way. So there's an overlap there that makes neo-paganism more than just the woo-woo part of it. There are some people who are coming at that kind of part of our spiritual mosaic from more of a scientific kind of place or a concern for Gaia. The reality of magic and the real definition of what magic is something that I learned from The Spiral Dance. And today, the word manifesting has become more popular, but to me, it's kind of the same thing. Magic is changing the environment through conscious will. Also included in this concept is the Wiccan Reed, R-E-D-E, which is kind of like the golden rule of neo-paganism and magic, that what you put out into the world returns three times over. You might also think of this concept as karma. So it's definitely, you could associate those two forces. But anyway, back to this idea of changing the world by changing your mind. You know, your reality reflects your thoughts. This book is also about witchcraft as a religion. And I have to tell you, I remember very distinctly, I think I was about 8 years old, when Rumors, the Fleetwood Mac album, came out in 1977. And, you know, this is all over the radio. And whether you realize it or not, if you've ever heard a Fleetwood Mac song or a Stevie Nicks song, it's probably from that album. And when, you know, you hear it on the radio or something, it's one of the most played. But I think we were in a car trip or something, you know, with my parents. Maybe we were driving to Florida to see relatives. I don't remember. But I had a rock magazine. Maybe it was Rolling Stone or some kind of music magazine. And there was a story, a big feature story about Stevie Nicks. And in that story, she talked about the concept of white witchcraft and how she identified as a white witch or a good witch. And about 10 years after that, of course, that made a huge impression on me as an 8-year-old. I was like, yes, I think I am too. And then, you know, 10 years later, I discovered this Starhawk book, The Spiral Dance, in this witchy little store in Athens, Georgia, where I went to college, called Earth Household. And I had gone there to buy a smudge bundle for a house that I was renting. We were always renting these little, you know, musty old houses. And so we knew about kind of smudging a place to get rid of the energy, but also to get rid of some of the dank smell and, you know, old people's pets that had lived there before, that kind of thing. So we, me and my roommates, went to this witchy little place to look for the ingredients for that ritual, for the whole smudging ritual, to find a sage bundle and maybe even to kind of ask somebody what we were supposed to do with it. And so we went in search of it. We heard about this little place called Earth Household. And I never anticipated it, but there was a small sort of bookstore section in Earth Household, and it had all these books on neopaganism and environment and, you know, Gaia and all that kind of stuff. And one of the big ones was The Spiral Dance by Starhawk. And it, for me, was kind of the intellectual beginning of what I do now to this day. Now, if you check out this book, there are admittedly a lot of invocations and ritual speeches that are honestly a little bit much for me. I find the whole call and repeat script kind of concept annoying in any kind of church. That's just my personal thing. I advocate for choosing your own words and writing your own ritual language, or just speaking from the heart. Like, that's my feeling of how you really get into the power. But there are other people that like the tradition of using other people's scripts and invocations and prayers and hymns and all that stuff. So anyway, I don't necessarily love that part of the book, but the concept of rituals and spell casting and designing action plans around the seasons and cycles of the moon, that is something that I use in every aspect of my life to this day. If you'll remember my episode with Diana Fragman, who created the concept of the 3x3 project out of my way of doing quarterly goal setting, all of that has its origins in The Spiral Dance by Starhawk. So Starhawk is the one who taught me how to make magic in a real way. So the other magic that I make came to me very much through the work of Julia Cameron, who Michelle Van de Pass and I both spoke about on the last episode about aligning with your purpose. The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. When I worked in corporate retail back in like 1998, this was before I did the buying at the cool metaphysical bookstore. I was working in a little bit more of a corporate retail environment. And I had a friend there who was my boss, named Mandy Markham, and she gave me The Artist's Way as a gift for like maybe Christmas or my birthday or something. And she inscribed it in the front. She wrote, "Sometimes we have to create the life we want." And I think that she knew maybe instinctively, and because maybe she felt this way herself, but I had wandered really far away from the creativity that I had when I was in college. Throughout my 20s, I kind of did the bartender / trying to be a writer thing. I did that for years. I waited tables, worked in restaurants, so I could make a bunch of cash in a little amount of time and then work on writing and on my art. And so I did that for most of my 20s, and it never really got me anywhere. So I decided to do this whole real job thing, and I went into corporate retail and accidentally excelled at that and ended up sort of high up in the corporate retail world, but it was so far away from my soul. And for those of you who are somewhere in a job that you feel like you're so far away from your soul, the beautiful thing is that Mandy was there. In that environment, in that most unlikely of places, there was this wonderful kindred spirit who gave me this book called The Artist's Way and told me that, you know, sometimes we have to create the life that we want. And that almost brings me to tears to talk about that and what that did for me, because this really simple concept of writing these morning pages was so perfectly what I needed to reconnect with my creativity, especially as a writer in particular. Some people might call this concept gratitude journaling. You could kind of combine the two if you want to. But the interesting thing is I started to do the morning page ritual. And again, this idea of just sort of gleaning the one thing that really kind of impacts you and works and then moving on. There's so many other aspects to The Artist's Way. So don't let me oversell just this one little part and have you dismiss it thinking there's nothing else in there. For me, it was the morning pages. It was the exercise of every day sitting down and writing, not for hours and hours and hours and producing something brilliant, but just the exercise and the discipline of doing it just a little bit and carving out a small little piece of time every day that's devoted to plugging into that channel. And that is something that I do again to this day. That's how I write books. Is kind of expounding on that concept. But 10 years later, I had created the business that you know me for. And at that time, it felt like I was so far adrift from something that I was supposed to be doing that felt like it was part of my purpose and closer to my heart. And I remember back in those days, you know, this was like the AOL time period, and Mandy was doing this as part of an online group. So I have no doubt that there are probably Facebook groups out there now who are doing the artist way as I speak. And so if your creativity has ebbed, or you've lost the thread, so to speak, or you need to sort of wake up the artist within you to get that back up and out of yourself, this could be the rope that pulls you back from the brink. So go check out The Artist Way if you haven't. And if you have done The Artist Way back in the day, consider busting it back out and shaking it off and doing a month of morning pages and seeing what that jump starts. The other book that I recommend often is The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. This is the basic foundation of so many of the other practices that we talk about here on my show and in the sort of New Age realm in general, you know, meditation, mindfulness, reframing, affirmation, positive thinking, manifesting, habits, all of that stuff, you know, law of attraction, whatever it might be. In order to kind of do all of that, you need a basic sort of understanding of how the mind works conceptually. And I mean mind with a capital M, not necessarily the soul and not necessarily the intellectual part of you, but the kind of thing that sort of sits in between the two, the mind. And in my humble opinion, no one has ever better explained how to observe your mind than Eckhart Tolle in this book, The Power of Now. This is where you go. You know, those people who say, oh, I can't meditate, or I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing when I'm meditating, or I don't know how to clear my mind and all that kind of stuff. If you're ever hung up about the whole idea of meditation and mindfulness and what it is that you're supposed to be doing, read The Power of Now. The thing that I most got from The Power of Now was this idea of sort of being able to observe my mind outside of it and to police my thoughts, to change my thoughts, to manage what was going through my mind, to be able to stop something and say, no, don't like that, turn that around, let's think about this instead. You know, all of that ability of sort of lucid, active thinking, really, I can't think of a better source for learning how to do that than The Power of Now. And these basic perceptions will allow you to do all the other stuff that we talk about. And I kind of feel like you can get a really great book on manifesting, or you can get a really great book on meditation. And if you don't really understand what the basic landscape is and how to move through it, then you've got a map to someplace really great, but you've got no vehicle to take you there. So check out The Power of Now and get that basic framework in there. And he has a way of explaining it. It's almost hard to describe, but he has a way of speaking and of writing that sort of drags you through this in such an effortless way. And it's not difficult. It's very easy to absorb and to change from this. The other book that I want to throw at you that is a huge lifesaver, and I've talked about it before, I've written about it, it comes up over and over again. It's called Refuse to Choose by Barbara Scher. It used to have a subtitle, A Program for Doing Everything You Love, and that's how I first discovered it. Now it's got a little bit of a different subtitle on it, and I don't have it right in front of me, so you can check it out. You can link to it and see what the new subtitle is. But the internet says that this book was originally published in 2006, and I actually think there's no way that can be right, because I started Shift Your Spirits in 2006, and it seems like it was at least 6 months, maybe a year, for me from the time that I found Refuse to Choose to actually becoming a professional intuitive and starting Shift Your Spirits. So I'm thinking that the hardback of Refuse to Choose must have come out in 2005. So I think it was about a year. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just like really, really early 2006, January. But the thing that that's such a big deal to me about this book is it was a huge turning point. And again, it was, you know, a repeat of this reoccurring message, which I'll get to in just a second. But so I found Refuse to Choose because I would go to this Borders bookstore across the street from where I lived. I was so poor, I didn't have internet. I was constantly stealing Wi-Fi. And this was before everyone had free Wi-Fi at Starbucks and all that. I think Starbucks still charged for it back then. But so the Borders had a cafe and they had internet there. So I would go to Borders every day to get online. And of course, I would kind of browse through the store. I loved being in bookstores. My apartment was depressing and sad, and so the bookstore was kind of my office away from home every day, and I would go there. And I discovered this book called Refuse to Choose, just sort of popped out at me from an end cap or a table or something like that. And this is one of the only books in my entire life that I've ever done this with. I used to go and visit that book at the bookstore like it was in jail and I was, you know, its relative, and I didn't have the money to buy it. It was a hardcover, you know, it was probably $30 or something like that, and I could not afford to buy it. So I would go every day after I finished working. I would go over and find it, and I would pick up where I left off and read a little bit more of it, and then read a little bit more. And I did that for however many days it took me to get through the whole book. And I was furiously writing notes. I was afraid they were actually going to arrest me for transcribing like an entire book sitting in one of their big puffy leather chairs. So the thing about this book that's so powerful is, you know, Barbara Scherr is someone who's worked with creatives and writers. It could be seen as an extension of something like the artist's way, if you wanted to like do the two things in conjunction or whatever. I could see how they make sense together. But the concept that she uncovered was something she calls the scanner. And a scanner is a different type of creative brain. It's a different personality type. You know, so much of our education system and our workforce is designed around the idea that you pick a major, you work really hard and learn a lot about this one topic, and then you go and get this job, and then you sit in a corner in some office and you do that thing, whatever it is, for the next, you know, 20 or 30 years or whatever. And for some people, that's a really good path. That's a very solid, safe way to go. But for a lot of us, that is soul-crushing, mind-numbing, and absolutely just going to make us insane and suicidal. And she was the first person who ever took the idea that, you know what, if you weren't wired that way, it wasn't that there was anything wrong with you, it was just that you had a different kind of wiring, and that there's a different way to support that kind of creativity and intellect, and that there are certain kinds of fields and jobs and career paths that make a lot more sense for people with that kind of personality. So, ironically, she wrote this book that is kind of like a linear program for a personality type that doesn't like to complete linear programs. So I kind of recommend that you do the same thing that I did, which was just kind of go through it and absorb the epiphany of the message that there's nothing wrong with the way that you think. And the reason why you've had a million jobs and they've all been tangents and they've all been dead ends and they've all been rabbit holes is because you're trying to stick a, you know, square peg in a round hole. And that the epiphany for me was that there was nothing wrong with me. It was what was wrong was where I was trying to plug myself in. And so if you totally switch the premise, there's nothing wrong with you. You have this gorgeously gifted, complex, different way of thinking and being in the world. Okay, that's an asset now. Now, where can we plug that asset that it fits? And you know what? Just the message, there's nothing wrong with you. All the things you've been beating yourself up for, you got it all wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. That was such a game changer for me. Like, I'm pretty sure I probably quietly wept in the middle of a bookstore because I was at such a low point and I was so destitute. And at the same time, the thought of going back into, I don't know, like corporate retail again or something, it seemed like I had really burned that bridge. There was no way I could convince myself to stuff myself back into that. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with it. If it was something that, you know, I really loved and thrived in, it's fine. And you may feel that way if you do that kind of work. But I knew that I was supposed to be doing something else and I didn't know how to do it, how to just get from what do I do with my gifts to actually making those gifts a thing that other people can appreciate and access and are affected by. And the turning point for me was being in that bookstore, too broke to buy that book, and that book having the message that I was already everything that I wanted to become. And that's the message that I was getting from my guides. And so the reason why it made me cry was it was like the synchronicity moment of the sign, the thing falling in front of you at just the right moment. It could have a really, really simple message, but the power of the timing was so over the top that for me, that book absolutely recognizes. That book I recognize as being the thing that allows me to be here having this conversation with you right now. It allowed me to be who I am. It was a permission. That's what it was. It was permission to be who I am. So if you need that permission, you need that attitude adjustment around how you're feeling about yourself and what you're calling your success and failure and all that stuff and how you're orienting yourself around the idea of path and purpose and career. The cool thing about this book is it is very much a career-oriented, job-oriented program. It's about the types of work that you're most likely to excel in. And it walks you through and really shows you some different environments that you should be searching in that can produce an entirely different result for you. So yeah, I'll shut up now. I've said so much about this book and I probably will continue recommending it to the end of time. But you're already everything that you've ever wanted to become. There's nothing wrong with you. You just might be a scanner. And it's full circle, you know? It's back to the thing that Michelle said as the explanation for why she's so over the whole concept of self-help, that you don't need to fix yourself. You know, that's such a broken way of approaching it. You know, it's already within you. So it's much more about revealing it and uncovering it and accessing it. It's already there. So for any self-help book, I do believe that if there's just one little thing that you get, one little message, take that and move on. You know, just sort of consume that aha moment, flick that switch and move forward. And usually it's just kind of one big thing per book. So I want to recommend The Money Shift by Slade Robertson. Yes, I'm going to throw my own book in here. And the reason why is because, not because I wrote it and not because I'm trying to sell it, but because it very much represents all these other books that I just recommended for you in action. It's me taking the messages of Refuse to Choose and The Power of Now and The Spiral Dance and manifesting and creating the life that I needed to live and the shift that I needed to have around money and abundance. And so going all the way back to the idea that it's just the recipe. This book is not a book that I wrote. I wrote the book because this is a recipe that I did to change my life, to go from being destitute and sad and what the hell am I doing with myself to recreating my relationship with abundance and learning how to police my thoughts and to reframe all that negativity and shift it into something that was affirmation. And the money shift is literally exactly what I did to change that for myself. So there's a sixth alternate book, if we don't get to count my own book. And this one actually won't apply for everyone, maybe not as many people. But for those of you who are still smokers, this could be life-changing. It's called The Easy Way to Stop Smoking by Alan Carr. And I quit smoking 8 years ago after smoking for 20 years. I tried everything multiple times, medication, hypnosis, therapy, more medication, cold turkey, exercise, you know, everything. I did it all. And it was the only substance that ever felt like it really controlled me. It was my one true addiction. And it was the one thing that was lingering years beyond that epiphany of the money shift and refuse to choose and, you know, starting Shift Your Spirits and becoming, you know, who I am now, which is admittedly someone I'm pretty happy with compared to, you know, who I was in the past. So this was the one thing that was stuck in my aura that didn't belong there, and I couldn't get rid of it. And it, the fact that I couldn't get rid of it with all the positive thinking and the reframing and the, you know, all the other tools didn't work. This was an addiction. This was a different kind of animal. And so I know that you're probably thinking like, okay, The Easy Way to Stop Smoking, that's a great title for a book, but how is a book going to do what drugs and hypnotherapy can't? Well, I thought the same thing. And the interesting thing is that he starts out the book talking about, you know, how the hell is this going to work? And it really grabs you by your skepticism right off the bat. It really speaks to you at that level. So that was one of the things that like drew me in and got me to read it. And in a way, I have to tell you, I've been looking at this book and wondering like, for years now, how is it that this book actually helped me quit smoking when nothing else would work? How did a book do it? And it's not the most literary book. It's not the most emotional book. It's not written in any particularly fantastic style. But the thing that I associate with the most is probably The Power of Now. And the reason why is it's not about the style and it's not about the content, but something about the way in which he explains the mechanics of how addictive thoughts work, in a way that really breaks it down and simplifies it and makes it so logically accessible that you're kind of nodding your head through the whole thing. And you can't help but start to recognize how your thoughts are messed up around smoking. And more than anything, it's not the thoughts about being addicted to cigarettes that you're messed up about. It's the thoughts about quitting. It's all the messages that you're getting that you can't. There's a lot of companies that have a lot of vested interest in producing a message that makes you feel like this is an insurmountable thing that you can never pull off. And so what was interesting is what he does is really debunk a lot of the things that keep you from feeling like, really on a really subconscious level, the things that keep you from having success with a lot of the other tools is really partly this programming, this negative kind of skepticism that has been put in your brain purposefully by other people. And so it really, I can't put my finger on it. It just showed me in such a clear way how I was under this spell. And without telling me, you can break the spell, or here's how to break the spell, it simply showed me, this is what's happening. And just by seeing what was happening, I realized what to do to make it not happen. And like Refuse to Choose, on some level, it simply told me that I could quit smoking. it in such a powerful and simple and epiphany, aha kind of way, it was so much less complicated than all the other lies that I've been telling myself. And the lie is about how hard everything is. And the lie is about how complicated everything is. So again, like Refuse to Choose, it simply said, this isn't hard. This is actually easy. There's a reason why you're experiencing what you're experiencing. And here's how to see it in context. And once you have context, it's like you're lost in the woods and somebody just zoomed you out like a Google map, and you can see, oh, to the left 100 yards, the woods end. And you just walk that way naturally. You know, you create the solution by seeing a clearer picture of what the problem dynamics are. So anyway, I really recommend The Easy Way to Stop Smoking. Give it a chance. Be skeptical. I don't care. Shake your head. Tell yourself there's no way a book's going to help you. Try it anyway. You wouldn't be the first person to tell this story. So if you heard yourself in one of these existential crises, then I obviously highly recommend any or all of these books. I've talked about them in the order that they came into my life, but you could simply put them in the order of importance for your situation. Prioritize them however you need to. And honestly, you could work with many of these titles simultaneously, especially something like The Artist's Way and The Money Shift, which both have journaling exercise components. I can see many constructive synergies and overlaps that might occur. I will put, of course, some Amazon links in the show notes and the blog post for this episode. And I guess we've both discovered that I don't really hate self-help books as much as I claimed. Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. You are already everything you've ever wanted to become. You fulfill your life purpose with every breath you take. You're not missing anything. You've always had the power. Reveal it. Let it out. Push it forward. You will not miss what is meant for you, especially if you create it yourself. Make it so. And I'll talk to you later.